At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, and fishing needs, go to eastport.info. Now let's get this show started.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur. Your host, Brad Hurlbus. And today we're rocking down in Texas, and we're bringing Cody Richards right onto the show.
What's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
Thanks for having me. It's the middle of summer. Like, it's almost August. Like, we're just a few days away, and our early teal starts in September. So, like, I'm a month away from go. Like, it's a month away from game time here.
Yep. Same with us. Ours starts in September as well, actually. So, we run September 10th through September 25th for teal season this year.
All right. So, we're September. So, our teal season's the same. It's 7 days. It's the 1st through the 7th. Our early goose season is the 1st through the 15th. And then, if I remember correctly, there's not even a break for a goose. It rolls right into regular season then. So, but early early season's when it's really fun, because regular season, 3 birds a day. Early season's 5 birds a day. So, like, you're going out there, you're setting all the decoys. It really makes it worth it to get a 4-man limit, throw 20 geese on the ground. That's a pile. And teal's always a good time. Like, I know up here, like, it's got to be the same for you. Like, the colors are super washed out. It takes some knowledge to know, like, you're shooting teal. Like, I'm assuming that's the same down by you.
Well, so I don't think we have. I mean, there is plenty of people that shoot the wrong species during teal season. Right. You know, the ongoing joke is that everybody is, you know, stomping spoonies in the mud, you know.
So the joke for you is spoonbills. For us, it's wood ducks.
Like, okay.
I know wood ducks get slaughtered by
and they do too, like on some of those East Texas, you know, and some of our lakes where there is some good wood duck hunting, you know, you will get your wood ducks, but most places in Texas you're either hunting the lakes for teal, the rivers, but mainly where the hot commodity is in the rice fields.
Got it. So a lot of field hunting then for the teal.
Yeah, a lot of field hunting. I mean, you know, they call them rice rockets. I don't know if y'all refer to them as that up there.
We don't. I never have, at least, but we don't have rice up here.
Correct. Y'all don't, you know. So why would y'all refer to them as rice? Maybe they'd be corn rockets.
Yeah, I mean, they'll hit the – I mean, but early season, though, like, we're not cutting corn until October.
Okay.
So, I mean, all of our corn's still standing. Like, we're hunting marshes mainly at this time of year. That's mainly what we're doing, marshes or rivers this time of year. And even for the rivers, it's not – I'm hunting backwaters of rivers, which really look like a marsh at that point.
Okay.
So, the geese will be field hunting. Geese, you'll get, like, a good hay cut. They might be cutting alfalfa. It's too early for beans still. It's going to be too early for corn. But, like – if you get on a fresh cut of like hay field or alfalfa feed, that's golden this time of year. Like, that's like, if you can get permission on that field, it's game on.
Okay. Yeah. See, I don't have a lot of experience, you know, as far as like the Canada goose hunting goes, because we don't have much of that down here.
Sure. And like for me, I've never hunted rice. And to be honest, I didn't even realize like rice was a big deal in Texas. Like, I had no idea until you just said that.
Yeah, so rice is a big deal in Texas and in Louisiana.
I knew Louisiana because
Okay.
I talked to Jay, the owner of Blind Grass, and we were talking about that, and he was talking about hunting rice for speckle
Yep. They tear them up over there. And same with Arkansas. Arkansas has been really tearing up specks the past couple of years.
which that's something I got to get down there for. Like that's something I like. We'll occasionally get a random snow or speck to come in with a like get completely lost and confused and be rolling with a flock of Canada geese, but it's rare. Like if a
See,
speck is spotted in Wisconsin, it goes all over every Facebook group. I saw a speck or I saw a snow like
so
instantly.
that's how it is for us with the Canada. Unless you're in North Texas, and in North Texas, we do have some migratory, Canadas, but at that point, they're not even like a greater Canada,
Sure.
They're more the cacklers, they're the small-bodied ones.
Got it. Got it. We'll get some cracklers to come through here, but it's mainly greater and lessers that we have. We have your just standard, typical, big old black, white-headed, like black and white head goose. I mean, they're just big. Like my dog's pretty small. She'll get them, but she struggles. Like my old lab was much better at hauling them heavy birds back, especially after a long day. But she's
I'm sure your
aggressive.
dog appreciates the teal hunts after that, after having to tote those big things.
She loves them grouse, man. That's where she really loves it. Much less work for her. She can run around in the woods and she doesn't have to swim and make her way through decoys or swamp grass and everything else.
Right, and not get and not freeze to freeze to death to get in that cold water.
Oh yeah. Once we start to get that ice up, the dog stays home, and I'm using a small boat or my big boat to get birds because it just gets
See,
to
and
be a
I don't have to mess with any of that ice stuff. Ice eaters, breaking ice. I've had a break ice maybe once.
Oh, I was breaking ice. I've had seasons like if we've had a really cold year. So on a real, I think it was 2019, I was ice fishing before deer hunting, which is always the third weekend of November. I was ice fishing.
Holy cow.
Like that's how hard we froze up. And I'm sitting there weighing the option. It's like, do I go duck hunting and find some open water, or do I go hammer bluegills and crappies on early ice when they're dumb and have no idea what's going on yet? And I'm like, I can't pass up early ice in the middle of
I
November.
mean,
Like,
you can. I mean, to go tear up some panfish
right.
and fry them up whole,
And out of that super cold water, they just like they're just firmer. They just taste better to me personally. So I mean, yeah, like I'm like duck hunt or be one of the first ones out on early ice in November, which is the earliest I've ever been out. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna go chase some fish.
But see, then you can chase the ducks longer. If you get on the early fishing, you knock the fishing out. Now you just focus on your hunting.
And that was the crazy thing about that season. Like it got warm, the water opened back up. I don't think I was back on ice again until like the end of December.
What?
It was
That was a
crazy.
crazy season for you to be that frozen where you were able to ice fish, because I know that ice has to be a certain thickness because you have to be able to walk out on it or drive your vehicles on it and the sheds and that whole 9 yards,
So early ice, you're walking, and I don't go out unless I have a good clear 3 inches, which a lot of people won't touch 3 inches. I know people that go out less. You have to do what you feel comfortable with. I would never tell someone to go out on three because if three can go to one really quickly, especially if you have a little current or a little difference in like wind. So I use a
Okay.
spud bar and I spud my way out. Basically, it's a metal bar with a triangular tip on the front. Like, and I know like one good whack is still wa like if I get like one good whack and I get water coming up, like that's like no, we got to
Yeah.
back it up. That's too much. So, and you can get weird lines in the ice. Like, because you'll get windswept areas where like the wind will come across, keeping that water open, then it'll flash freeze overnight. And if we get a little dusting of snow, that line is gone. So I mean, you can go from like safe ice to half an inch in ice in less than one stride.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Oh yeah. So you got to be on your game for that early ice. So I spud like every step I stop, like I poke every step. Like my arm is sore by the end of the day, not from drilling holes or fishing. It's from using that
But
spud bar. Like,
from making sure you're safe.
right. But that was a crazy year. That was the same year grouse camp. Like I got there the first week. It was gorgeous up north and northern. Like highs were like low 60s, lows were like 40s, and this is middle of October still. Like this is right around, this is Halloween weekend. My buddy met me up there after I'd been there for 5 days, and the weather snapped. Highs went to the teens, lows in the single digits, snow every single day, and we're in my camper. And I officially know, and people here have already heard this, but my camper, when it's in the teens, my camper uses 10 pounds of propane a day to heat it. It's a fun trip. Like, it was a good time, but like, it was crazy, the weather, that how it snapped. And then it got warm.
That's a lot of propane, though. 10 pounds a day.
Yeah, like when I'm factoring in my hunting trips now, like, if I think there's going to be a cold weather snap, like, especially with the cost of propane now, yeah, like, I got to factor in propane.
For sure. Yeah, for sure, for sure.
But no, it's good. And, like, I want to kind of, like, roll back to how I normally start my shows. I love that we just started right away. It's awesome. But I want to know how you got into hunting. Like, did you grow up with, were you growing up, like, with your grandpa or your father or uncle or...
Yeah, so actually, I got into duck hunting primarily. That's, I mean, off the jump, I started dove hunting and duck hunting. So I've been doing it since I was like 3. Of course, you know, I wasn't carrying an actual gun, but at 3, 4 years old, even 5, I was taking a BB gun with me. All right. You know, so when we got to the blinds, you know, growing up, I'd either have to be toted in by four wheeler or on one of my uncle's shoulders or my dad's, and We'd march, you know, through the rice and set up, and, you know, I'd sit there with them in the blind and pretend to be shooting the ducks with the BB gun. And as a kid, I got fooled because we'd go to clean the birds. And, you know, as a kid, you're shooting a BB gun, you're used to a BB. So right. It's like, they're like, hey, look, you shot this, and they're showing me a BB in it. I'm like, oh yeah, I did that, you know? And I believed it for a good while until I got older and, you know, old enough to realize, hey, I got juked. But right. it fueled my fire and my passion to do what I do now.
Sure. That's awesome. It's funny looking back, but that's awesome. Like, hey, we found a BB in here. You must have got this one.
Yep.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, and I plan to do the same trick with my daughter. She's 9 and I've done that trick with her, and she's still yet to catch on. So
that's awesome. And I remember taking my nephew out, and I smoked a goose, and he shot right after, and he goes, "I got that one." I'm like, "You sure did!" Like, there was no hesitation. Like that was your bird, man. Like you had the confidence. Like the timing was right. Like I'm pretty sure I dusted that thing. But like, I mean, he wasn't a terrible shot. Like, I'm not like, I've seen much, like, I've taken youth out before, and I've seen some kids that have like never handled a shotgun before, but I took my nephew out like sporting clays and stuff. And I think his first time out on the clay course, he shot a 14, which like the average for the first time is like 12 or something. And he's 12. I'm like, dude, that's solid. Like that's a good round. Like for your first time, I wouldn't be upset with that at all, but it was a good time.
I wouldn't be upset with that at all. I mean, I've been out to those clay courses where I've seen somebody hit 3-4 clays out of the whole, you know, the whole volley of them. Moving through all the different positions that they have and hit 3.
I'd probably pack up and go home if I was having that bad of a day. Like, at that point, I'd probably throw my shotgun at one and be like, nope. It's the shotgun. It's not me. It's the shotgun.
It's the shotgun. I didn't shim it right. It's shimmed to the right. I got to shim it over to the left. The barrel's not straight.
I don't have enough drop. I'm not keeping my head. Now, I will admit, like, I'm terrible at keeping my head down. Like, and that makes all the difference in the world. Like, if I have a good, like, if I go out and practice and shoot a lot of clays and get into a good, like, good rhythm, and I keep my head down, like, I'll watch my scores. Like, if I don't shoot much and I'm 100% instinctive by the time I hit duck season, like, I find myself keeping my head up to watch the birds, and I, like, miss a lot of shots. Like, when I start to remember, like, you got to put your head down, like all of a sudden I start hitting birds.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. For sure, for sure.
It's I've been waterfowl hunting for years, and it's still like, I still want to watch the birds work. That's the problem. Like, that's where I'm at. Like the birds are in range, and their feet are down and they're cupped up. And I'm like, I don't want to put my head down and focus. I want to watch the birds.
It's a beautiful sight. I mean, just seeing Mother Nature and what you were able to do, you know, come together and, you know, get the whole point of hunting. Yeah. Is to hunt and, you know, get the game, whatever you're after, and successfully, you know, kill it. But at the same time, you know, that hunting's more than that. You know, it's about
Oh,
the
for sure.
commodity and the blind or at the camp, you know, and a lot of people don't realize that. A lot, you know, we got a lot of new generation hunters that it's all about the photo and that's it. And
And
that's.
I think that's a trend. I've talked about this before, and I really believe there's a transition a lot of hunters go through. I really do, because like when I first started waterfowl hunting, I'll admit I fell into that. I needed a pile of greenheads only. Like I needed limit pictures. Anything less than that just wasn't. And like it started to slowly change where I realized like that's not the driving factor for my experience anymore. It's that like amazing retrieve by my dog, or it's that flock that cupped in at that last second and just made like you made that perfect call and they like hit the brakes and turned and came right in, or it's the retrieve of the dog. It's that one retriever that where the dog gets that perfect mark and it's kind of buried and they like you're like you kind of know where it is and the dog just goes right for it and grabs it and break. Like those are the moments now.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
See, and I'm getting chills just right now, literally just talking about this, because it's basically all your hard work that you've done
Right.
coming together and getting paid off, and you actually get to see it pay off in front of you. You know,
Yep.
there's no long wait for years and years to reach that accomplishment.
And I mean, I've had some hunts where, like, I was hunting a super high pressured area. The birds knew it. I got to a decent spot, but like just to get any bird to work is hard. And I think I only shot two birds that day, but I saw at least 1,000 birds, and like it was snowing and they were just flying and working. And like they knew where the safe areas were. They knew where the dangerous areas were. You got some new birds in there but I was able to get to come in. But like I didn't have, like, if you looked at my picture afterwards, there was two greenheads. That was it.
Yeah.
Like that. And those were the only birds that worked my spread. Like I didn't like miss a ton of shots or anything like that. Like those were the only two birds that worked my spread. But that day was amazing, and it's burned in my mind as the snow's fallen and there's hundreds of ducks circling around me, and they're just like, nope, I know what you are. But it's like, it was awesome just to watch those birds and the weather, and like, it was crazy.
Oh, absolutely. And then on top of that, you know, with the birds, like you said, you got two, and I guarantee you that when you went back to the boat ramp or walked back, I don't know where you're hunting, but I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people that didn't even get to fire a shot that day.
And that happens. I mean, I've been there before where I picked that wrong spot or the wrong blind or just wasn't set up right. And the birds wanted nothing to do with me. And you hear that hunter down the way just hammering away. It's like, man. And then I have to think, like, I've been that hunter before and I've made that happen. And I picked the right spot. I mean, that gets tough though, because then like personally, I'm like, did I scout enough? Like, did I screw up my scout? Like, that's what it rolls back to me. And then I start thinking, like, why did I pick here? I'm like, was this just because I've had a good hunt here before? Did I actually scout it? And most of the times, it's because I had a good hunt before and I didn't have time to scout it, so I rolled the dice. Like, that's really how it works.
But the fact that you take the time to break it down, even to that extent, most hunters do not. So, you know.
Well, I like to take out, like I said, I take out veterans and first responders and youth. So I really try to like approach every hunt the same. Like I want to give someone a really great experience. And that doesn't mean that we're going to kill a lot of birds like that. Like that's just like not the experience. I'm going for the whole experience. Like I want them to like, I want them to enjoy like the decoys when the sun rises. Like I want them to see that picture. Like, cause those, like I've got a couple of sunrises burned in my mind that will never leave. Like I want to see even if the birds are working, maybe they flare at the last second, but they see those birds work and they get to experience those good working birds and cook maybe a little breakfast out there for them or something. And like just the whole experience to like see what it is, because like once, like there's something special about waterfowl hunting to me, like because it's not a solo sport. Like I'm in the blind with people, and we get to talk crap about each other, like make fun of each other. Like it's so laid back, and we just joke around, and like we get serious for the minute the birds are working, and then like if birds aren't working, like it's right back to being a bunch of idiots.
Yep. Got a message out to swipe it off.
So you're a waterfowl guide in Texas, and I've never hunted Texas. So I'm curious, like what type, like come, like I know you're hunting rice for teal, but come middle of the season, like where are you focused on? Are you in fields? Are you in ponds? Are you like in lakes? Are you coastal, like coastal hunting? Like where's your go-to?
So me personally, with my outfitter and all my guides and everything else, we stay mobile. You know, we have private ground that we have access to across the state. And when the birds are there, we hunt it. And, sure. You know, and then, of course, you know, you have those guys that, hey, we want to hunt this area. And you say, hey, I have this land, you know, it's if we're going to roll a dice on it. But we can go if you want to go. Just know that it's a 50-50 shot. And you know, I'm up front with everybody and let them know what the deal is. Hey, look. You want to hunt close to home? We can hunt you close to home, but your odds are going to be less, you know, less success rate. And then, but we hunt all over Texas. I mean, from the lakes, the rivers, the bays, the backwaters in the bay systems, little salt ponds, farm ponds. I mean, I try to stay on the birds as best I can and chase them throughout the state, you know. On my website, which I mean, I just use Facebook as a website, but, sure. If you go and look, it'll say that I, you know, my hunt
what's your website? Like call it out. It's all good, man. So
www.facebook.com/waterfowl outlaws. And that's waterfowlowtlawz. Not with the Z.
We'll link it. So there'll be links in the description. Everybody can easily find it.
When I'm doing my advertising, I post that hunts can take place within up to 3 hours of a drive from the center of Houston.
Okay.
Because, okay. You know, I want to put people on the birds. So,
right.
You know, and on top of that, now I offer offer clients or whoever, buddies, clients, whoever wants to come hunt, you know. I offer them different scenery so they're not having to see the same thing every time. And that's a big thing down here in Texas is you either hunt public ground, which your public ground, which is, you know, like your wildlife management areas are all on the coast primarily. Sure. So you're hunting salt marsh. And you have one in Matagorda, you have one in, you know, Galveston area. You have one on the east side of town in Anahuac, but it's all, you know, salt marsh, you know, salt water, backwaters is what it is. And it's some work. I mean, you're walking through, you know, waist deep mud at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to get to a spot. I mean, sinking. And I'm a big boy. You know, I'm like 280 pounds. And 280 pounds walking in marsh mud. I do not recommend it for anybody.
I'm not that big, but I've been in that marsh mud before, and yeah, it's not salt marsh mud, but I've been in that marsh mud before, and like when you're sinking up to your like your knees, middle of your thighs, up to your hip, that's some serious work.
No, it is. Actually, one time down in Trinity Bay, I was hunting with two of my buddies. We just went on a fun hunt. And the water went out on us. It was going out faster than we anticipated. So the hunt didn't even get to start. First light was about to happen, and the water's just rushing out of where we're at. And us being hunters, we're like, hey, look, we're going to get stuck either way. So let's at least shoot a couple birds at first light. So first light happened. We shot into a group of teal. We dropped two or three of them. And then we're like, all right, now we earned this. Now let's figure out how we're going to get out of here. And so,
did you walk in, or is that like, did you use a boat? Like,
no. So we were in the salt marsh in the boat. It was a pro drive, a center console pro drive. And we had all the decoys out in front of us and whatnot, you know, hunting the boat. And then we were just in this cut in this back lake, and the water just started pulling out and, you know, going into the bay. And we were watching, and we were like, man, it looks like the water's dropping. And we kept looking at it. Hey, I see more mud now. And they were like, well, I mean, we're already here. We're not going to have enough time to move and then go still make a hunt, you know? So we all tried getting the boat out. We eventually got it out. It was several hours of labor. I was stuck to the point of I had to figure I was laying on my back in the mud. Okay. But like I was laying on my back, like I was making mud angels, like a snow angel, you know, and my feet were just there and I was just floating on top of the surface. But anytime I'd move, like if I moved my leg, I was going straight down. So I had to figure out how to get my foot on the prop guard on my buddy's pro drive. And I had to have him trim it up to use it to lift me up out the mud to break the suction and everything.
That's crazy. Like
it was bad.
There's last year, the last hunt of the season, I knew the water was low, but I didn't know how low it was. Like I did, like it was where we needed to be. And I'm like, we're going to try. Right. And this was a rookie mistake on my part. I never moved the pin on my gator tail lower. So I had it set high for like better, like performance and speed, but I couldn't trim down far enough to like really work mud. And I got like, we're going into this bay. We're going back in there, and I'm like, it's shallow. I'm like, okay, it's real shallow. So I turn hard, and the boat's like, now like we're no longer in water, we're in mud, and the boat's skipping, and I'm trying to trim down and like keep speed, and we spin around, and I like it's just, ugh. I'm like, oh man, and this is so dark, and it's dark, it's early. It took us an hour, Tom, hour and a half to get out of there, like. I had a buddy with me, the guy that actually started this, like the Paddle and Fin podcast, Brian Schiller was with me, and he's wearing his fly fishing waders with boots. So he's got stocking foot waders with wading boots over the top. And we're both out like pulling the boat and like working back through this like knee to waist deep mud. And he loses a boot. So he found his boot, and I'm finally like his waders just weren't up to that task. I'm like, get in the boat on the push pole. So he's in the boat on the push pole, and like it's inches, like we're winning this by inches. And like, we somehow got set up still and we had a good hunt, but like everything was just so covered in mud. And this was the middle, like the last week of December, like we were supposed to get a big cold snap. It was already cold out. I'm out there the next day, like power washing. Like I used a 6-inch drywall knife to scrape the mud off my front deck.
Oh, yeah. So it's funny you brought that up. So that day, my buddy Ryan bought a box of brand new decoys at Bucky's because it was around Christmas time. Hell, it might have even been Christmas morning. Because I do remember making a post with the ducks that we killed with Christmas hats on them on the Instagram. But anyway, nice. So after the hunt, we went to the car wash, and I mean, we stayed at the car wash probably an hour at least, just hosing everything off. I'm talking about decoys, waders, the boat, the truck. I mean, we all stripped down, washed our normal clothes off, and then put our, you know, backup clothes on. It was an intense cleaning to still have a month left of hunting season.
That's crazy. Like it's crazy. Like you were nearing that mud, and you know you're in that mud. Like you know things are going to get muddy, but when you're getting in and out of the boat and everything else, and then even after, it's like when you have inches, literally inches of mud on your boat. It's like, man, like I was out there with a putty knife scraping it off. Like,
and like, it's people don't know mud until they reach those scenarios, and they're like, oh, this is that mud that everybody talks about.
My only saving grace, my only backup plan was I had two other buddies out on this marsh hunting with, like, not with us. They went their own way. We went a different way. And I had them in my hip pocket. I'm like, if I'm still trying to drag this thing out by 9 a.m., y'all are going to have to cut bait and come drag me out. Cause like at that point we're done.
Yep.
We got out. Like, it took us a good hour and a half. And there's quite a few swear words thrown around. Like, but yeah.
Yeah.
Like, looking back now,
that day that boat got stuck that bad, had I been there by myself stuck, I would have personally been screwed. I would have had to wait there until the tide came back in, or I'd had to crawl out of my waders to set myself free. You know, right. It was crazy. That bad. I mean, if it wasn't, and if there had only been two of us that day in the boat instead of three, we wouldn't have been able to manhandle it out either.
Right. Like, bigger boats, just harder to move. And my boat's not huge, but it's a 1651 F4 with a 37 gator tail. I mean, it's not a light boat. It's not like a 12-foot John with a 6-horse long tail. It's not like, yeah, I can just grab the thing and drag it. It's heavy enough where it's like, yeah, it takes work.
Well, do you know the PVC trick?
I don't care. Like, is that where you're talking about putting like PVC pipes on in front of it so it rolls over, yeah, the top?
So
of it?
When you can pull it, it'll, you know, break that surface.
I don't carry PVC pipe. I've read about that trick, but I've never actually like used it.
So I've used it. I mean, I didn't use it on my boat personally, but I have used it and it does work. I'm the same. I don't have any PVC poles in my boat either, you know, but that trick really does work.
I know guys that have used it on the Mississippi, because the Mississippi by us is pretty sandy. Like, a lot of people think the Mississippi is muddy. Up by us, it's sandy.
Okay.
Like, legitimate sandy. I'll get to that like in a real quick second. But I know guys that keep PVC on them where if they get stuck, they'll put it under the boat to roll it back off because they're run up on a sandbar. And I don't care what motor you have. I mean, if you're stuck on a sandbar, a surface drive doesn't eat in sand. Like, it doesn't.
No,
like,
no. All it does is eat your prop.
Right. But we were hunting that early, the last weekend of early season, and we walked the boat. Like, we took the boat way back into like a different backwaters out there. We threw all of our decoys. We put the boat about 200 yards away from us, 150 yards away from us. We walked it up on shore, stuck a stakeout pole through it, went over, hunted out of some taller grass, and first fly, and we were where the birds wanted to be. And this is why it was so disappointing. Like, we were where the birds wanted to be. And I didn't have my dog with me because there's just, she's older. And that was just a little too much current where I was comfortable hunting her there. Like, my first priority is making sure my dog's safe. Like most people that's got dogs. And I'm just like, absolutely, that's a little, yeah, too much current for me to feel comfortable unless I'm going to swim to get her if something goes wrong, because the boat's too far away. Like, I can't run and get the boat to go get her if something goes sideways. Yeah. First flock of geese come in, we drop two, both of them good splashdowns. Like, I'm like, sweet, let's go get the boat. We'll go get them. The one bird that hit the water, like, flat and hard, all of a sudden jumps up and sticks its head up. It's like, I'm out of here, and starts swimming hard. Like, that thing was flat for 30 seconds at least with its head in the water. And all of a sudden it jumped up like, hey, I'm going to leave. And right by us is like flooded taller grass. And I'm like, if it gets to that, we're going to lose it. So we're lobbing rounds at this thing and like it's out of range now. So I go run to get the boat. And while we were out there, the river dropped 2 to 3 inches. That 2 to 3 inches made all the difference where I, because of the sand, I basically had to walk the boat out and like we lost that bird. Like I was pissed. Like, I was so pissed. I'm like, how did we lose this bird? Like, I should have brought my dog. Like, everything, yeah, went like, because I couldn't, like, I couldn't get the motor to eat.
I should have brought my dog.
Because I couldn't get the motor to eat, and I was dragging sand, and I'm like this, and I drove back and forth through all that grass, and it was taller than me standing in the boat in 4 foot of water. Like,
see that? So that trick, the trick is, that's when you have a big guy like me as a friend, and then we sit in the front of the boat to just give you that much more to lift your ass end up to be able to push the boat a little bit.
That's probably what I needed. I probably should have told Brian to get in the front of the boat and then we could have probably got out of there. But like, I've got a solution for that this year. I picked up a Old Town Sportsman, what solo canoe. It's a 12-foot canoe. It's only 40 pounds. It's a single person canoe. So I'm going to make a rack to mount it on the side of the boat, because we normally, I don't hunt out of my boat normally on the Mississippi. There's so much grass and islands by us. Like, I ditch the boat and have a much better natural hide.
Yeah.
But I'll drag that canoe up with me. So if we get a cripple or something like that, that thing's so fast, I can chase a cripple down super quick. And being only, I think it's like 45 or 50 pounds. Like, it's so light. It's like, it weighs less than the blind I have on my boat.
That's crazy.
So that's the plan this year.
I mean, that's a whole nother topic of, you know, how far technology has came too, you know?
Right. Right. So when you guys are on marshes and that, like, I like tide's something I never consider. That's obviously something you guys are considering. Are you hunting from the boat? Are you hunting from islands? Like,
so, I mean, it just depends. Sometimes we'll hunt out of the boat, you know, and do like a East Coast style duck hunting here in Texas, which not a lot of people do or experience. And, you know, we'll break out the long lines and the decoy rafts and go out in the middle of the bay and hunt redheads and bluebills and divers, you know.
All right. All right. Then, so you're doing like a true open water hunt then out there.
Yeah. So we'll do that. And so we'll use, you know, but sometimes depending on where we're at, we can go put our layout blinds on a, you know, a oyster bed.
All right.
And set up, or there's islands that you can set up on, and we'll, you know, anchor the boat on the back side of the island. We'll hunt the front side of the island and, you know, away and out in front of us, we'll have all, you know, our 100 plus decoys.
So you're doing all, and that makes sense. I mean, that's similar here. Like, we have open water hunting, we're hunting islands, we're hunting out of a boat, depending on the scenario. So that all makes sense. Like, it's always interesting to me to like hear how like different, because areas can be so different. Like, just so different.
So I think, like, I agree. Like, I think the hunting, you know, that like y'all do probably, and us like on the Mississippi is the same, but just the terrain itself is just where your big differences are. And I guess also the waterfowl that you're getting and trafficking as well.
Right. And that's, you know, that leads me to my next question. I have two questions, because one, we're going to start with the one that really has me curious is, do you have to worry about gators on that salt? Like, I figured. Like, is that why you, like, when you said you should have brought the dog, like, did you not bring the dog because of gators? Like, that's my first
thought. Yeah, so in teal season, like, a lot of our public body of waters, you know, the lakes and the rivers and, you know, pretty much anywhere public that, you know, there's going to be gators, you tend to not bring your dog, because in September, the gators are really bad. It's hot. They're all out. And I mean, even going into these wildlife management areas and drawing a number and walking into one of their, you know, their landlocked ponds, there's alligators in there even.
Sure. Yeah, like, you know, that. Right. Like, I fished Florida. Like, my in-laws go to Florida every year. They rent a house. And one year, we finally drove down there. And I'm like, I'm going to fish. And I started reading all the laws. And I'm like, oh, look at that. I can carry in Florida when I'm fishing. I'm like, oh, you're damn right. I'm carrying in Florida when I'm fishing. Like, gators, like, I'm not used to that. I'm a Wisconsin boy. Like we ain't got, like, we just, like, funny I mentioned this, like, someone, they just found like a 2.5 foot gator in a lake up here. Like, someone released it, obviously, but it's like, that's the closest we get to a gator, and there ain't no way that thing's making it through winter.
Well, so that's the thing. So we do have to worry about gators, of course. You really don't hear too many like human attacks from the gators. You know, they don't really mess with us, and we don't really mess with them.
Sure.
But of course, you know, a dog going after, you know, a bird, yeah, they're going to mess with it. So normally what we'll do is we'll run a hunt, and then, you know, like if we're out in the marsh, you know, we'll hop in the boat and go pick up the birds after each, you know, volley, as long as there's nothing, you know, way out there, because sometimes you will have a gator come up and, you know, take your bird from him.
I believe it. Like, I was just going to ask, like, how many birds do you lose to gators? I mean, like, that's a smart gator. Like, and they're an animal, and all animals start to realize what's easy prey and what's not. Like, pressure changes things. Pressure changes the birds and all that other stuff. And like,
yeah, they're adapting, and that's all they're doing. You know, we're taking their stuff away from them. So they're having to adapt, and they're adapting the best that they know how.
I mean, I've seen an eagle grab a teal, like, and I've dropped. Like, I've had an eagle come in and grab a teal and take off. They ain't that,
yeah, and that way. Actually at one of the property that we have in Corsicana, we had an eagle out there for 2 days hunting our birds. And, you know, and it sucked, because on that, We had a hunt scheduled for that weekend, and it was like a Thursday and a Friday. The eagle decided it found where the birds were and, you know, scared the birds out.
Sure.
And luckily, the bird, we did get some birds did come back that Saturday morning when we ran the hunt, but not as much as what that was there before the eagle showed up.
I mean, I've got video of eagles, like, because I've got a lot of eagles up here being in Wisconsin, and like, I think all but one county has nesting pairs of eagles now. Like, our eagle population in the past 10 years has exploded.
Okay. Like,
I remember growing up. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say that, like, our, like, for us, it's not very common to see eagles.
Now, growing up, like, it was like, oh my gosh, a bald eagle. And now it's like, we go hang out on the river on the sandbar. It's like, there's an eagle. There's an eagle. Like, I've got video hunting last fall of two eagles coming in, sitting in a tree. And like, the mojo kicked off because I had it on a timer. Well, it's a lucky duck, whatever. And all of a sudden, one eagle came swooping in. The thing turned off, and it went and landed in the tree right above my boat blind, and it's staring down at my decoys like, which one's real? I opened the boat blind up, and that eagle's like, wait, what? And it takes off.
That's awesome.
It was cool, and I caught it all on camera.
That and not just that, but, you know, that's awesome. But also the fact is that the Eagles making that much of a comeback, that's really awesome.
It is. I think this was a couple of years ago, so it might have changed, but we had nesting eagles in every county except for one in Wisconsin.
That's wonderful.
So the only change could be is now that we have them in all counties. Like, I doubt it's gone backwards.
Yeah, so, I don't think it's gone backwards. Because I've seen more over the years than I have, you know. So I've noticed the same thing, you know, seeing, you know, a bigger population because I've seen them more.
Right.
More now than I have in past years. But like that eagle, I think that was the second eagle that landowner has ever seen in his entire life.
That's cool. Like that's cool. Like I'm like, I don't want to say like I'm spoiled or anything like that, but now it's like I see an eagle and it's like, it's, I almost see more eagles than like red-tailed hawks around here now. It's the craziest, but I'm over water. Wait, but I'm over water a lot more now.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is that too.
Another fun thing like this year is I've seen a lot of osprey and they've been a ton of fun to watch. Like hanging out on this, cause I do a lot of like in summertime, I use my boat a lot. Like, friends and I will, like, we have a river, the Wisconsin River by us. There's a bunch of sandbars. So we'll just go grab a sandbar and we'll hang out. And we were lucky to see another 10, like maybe 5 or 10 boats all day long. Like no one else joins us on our sandbar because they can go 100 yards or 200 yards away and find their own sandbar. So yeah. Like, it's super fun that way. And like watching the ospreys out there have been really cool because they hit that water so hard when they dive in. It's amazing. Like, they're way up there, and they just fold their wings, and they're a rocket, and it's only, like, 2 feet deep. Like, I don't know how they're not hitting the sand.
And breaking their necks, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been fun this year. Like, I don't remember seeing as many ospreys before as this year, so I don't know if it's just the way the weather's worked or if I've never really noticed it, but that's been cool.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Yeah, this weather has everybody, I think, scared for hunting season.
Yeah, it's, I don't think, I'd have to look. I don't think we're officially in a drought anymore. Last year, it was crazy low. Like, last year, places that always had water had none. Like, I had friends out scouting, and they're on the internet, and they have some Facebook pages, and They're like, if you haven't been scouting, you better get out there, because the places you think you're going to run with your boat, you aren't. And then all of a sudden, like, opening weekend came, and that Saturday night, the posts started flying. I couldn't make it out of the boat ramp, this, that, and other thing. And, like, the people that have been out scouting were like, We told you there was no water. We didn't have to do that.
We didn't have to do that. We were just being nice.
Right. And I know you said, like, I know we kind of talked beforehand that you guys are in a drought right now.
Yeah, so we're in a pretty bad drought. Bad enough, so rice fields, you know, when you lease these rice fields, not only are you leasing the hunting rights to them, you also have to have the pay for the water to be pumped onto the rice. You also have to pay for the loss of crop when your farmer, you know, cuts your hole out for you or sprays your hole out for you. So there's a lot that goes into the rice fields. And the reason why I bring the rice fields up is because one of our properties where we were guaranteed water for till season, we are not guaranteed water anymore because the LCRA, who controls the water for, you know, a lot of farmers, said that, hey, the water's so low, we cannot pull from any of the lakes. So nobody's getting water this season.
Oh.
So there's a lot of different farms, you know, rice, different crops in general, but, you know, but different industries. You know, you're going to have the rice industry affected. You're going to have the hunting industry affected because a lot of people are not going to have water. So what does that mean? Luckily, on my other property, I have a well. So anybody that has a well will have guaranteed water. That could mean is, hey, if you have water, you're almost 100% sure going to have the birds because there's no other water for them to go to.
Right. If you have the property this year, like, that's going to be key because the birds aren't going to have as many places to go to. It might, as much as it's crazy to sound, like, it might set up for some spectacular hunting.
Yes, it could and it can, but it can also, on the flip side of that, since there's not as much water, there's not as much crop, so now we can't hold these birds near as long, so they're going to move on faster than they would have before. Right. So now, you know, we're hunting these scragglers. And, you know, in Texas, we don't get, you know, constant pushes of birds. So we'll get a front, you know, like for opening weekend, we'll probably hunt those birds, you know, 2 or 3 weeks hunting the same birds, having to swap it up on them and switch the game up on them and keep tricking them and, you know, hunt the blind this day and then change it up and hunt a different part of the field just to keep the birds on their toes. Because here in Texas, especially down this far south, you're hunting the same birds.
Mm-hmm. We get good pushes of birds, but a lot of times, like, we'll still stall out. Like, we'll get good pushes of birds, but a lot of times in specific areas, depending on how far you're willing to drive, like, you'll get birds that will, like, you'll get that weird weather pattern where for 3 weeks, like, we don't get a good cold front, we don't get a good solid north wind, and, like, you're hunting, like, just stale birds, and you can tell because they know what's up. Like by the refuges on the Mississippi River, like, you can really tell when you don't have new birds, because the birds, like, evening hunts become better than morning hunts, because what happens, you've got all those wildlife refuges there where obviously you can't hunt in a wildlife refuge. And people that are listening, if you don't know that, like, you can't hunt in a wildlife refuge.
I saw you tell the listeners that. So in Texas, we actually have wildlife refuges where, you know, that we can hunt.
So I take that, like, on the river, there are refuges on the river, there's wildlife protected refuges, which aren't huntable. We do have different properties that aren't called a refuge that are huntable.
Okay.
So you're right. To clarify that, like, yes, that's generally speaking on the upper Mississippi River, like, there's wildlife refuges that are not, they're not refuges. Let me be specific. They're waterfall protection areas where you can't hunt.
Okay. Yeah. We have some of those too. I just know, like, you know, because I have heard people that say, hey, you can't hunt the refuge. And I was like, well, here in Texas, we're hunting the refuge, you know?
Sure. So you're right. I misspoke. I need to be more specific. And you're right, because everyone's from the country listening. they're waterfowl protection areas you can't hunt. I call them a refuge because, like, in us, like, we don't, like, our public areas really aren't labeled refuges. So for us, like, that's a refuge. Like, that's just a local term, I guess you would call it. But what the birds will do is they'll come out at night to feed in all the backwaters. And then, like, when all the boats come out and everybody comes out to start setting up, like, you'll watch this great exodus of birds go right to those protection areas, and they'll sit there all day long. Because they get smart. They know.
They get smart. They know. Absolutely.
So you get it, like, it's like, and like, this is a huge tip. Like if you're in this area, like, you have this, like, happen, even if you're not in this area, if you have those protection areas, if you get a cloudy, dark day, those birds will come out way earlier, and your evening hunt will be as what you would normally think as a morning hunt. So it's because it's getting dark out. It's still legal shooting time. Then birds are coming back out because they're like, oh, we're safe. But they're not safe because, like, it's still legal shooting time. Like, that's one of those areas you don't want to pull the pin too early. Like, you don't, like, if I'm going to go out there, like, if I'm going to make the trip to go out there, like, I'm hunting all day. Like, those are one of those weird spots where I'll hunt all day, and, like, I'll skip a morning to come out at 11 to hunt through the evening.
See, and it's funny you say that because, like, here in our rice fields, you know, it's primarily morning hunting. You primarily hunt the mornings here in Texas, you know, even for, you know, your bay hunts and everything else. Yeah, you can do the middle of the day hunts as well once you start pattern some birds, of course.
Right.
And we will switch it up, but primarily it's all morning hunts. And like you said, you'll hunt the, you know, the refuge and, you know, and wait for the birds to come back to it. Where sure. Us, our refuge shuts down at noon. So you have all to right. be out of there. All firearms have to be out of there, you know, at noon.
So that's a little different. That's different. So you're forced to hunt the morning, and then they let the birds have the afternoon.
Yep, exactly. And then even like on your – even on your public hunting areas, like with boats, you know, your public bays, your public rivers and lakes, even then, I'd say 80% of the hunters in Texas don't even hunt the evenings on those.
Really?
Yeah.
I will say, though, like, I would say there's definitely more morning pressure out there than there is evening pressure. And people, like, and can you have a good morning hunt out there? Of course you can, especially if you have new birds. If you have new birds, it doesn't matter. They don't know the game yet. But if you have stale birds, like if I had to choose like a half a day at work for vacation, I'm going out in the afternoon. Like there's no, but that's only in those specific areas by those wildlife protection areas. Yeah. You go away from that and get to
sorry for cutting you off, but no, say and on stale birds, you know, if you know you have fresh birds, all right, yeah, we're going to go hammer it in the morning, you know?
Exactly. But now you get like to like the regular marshes around here. Evening hunts seem to be evening hunts don't play out nearly as good as a morning hunt, even on stale boards. Like it's just those weird specific pockets around those protection areas where those birds get wise.
Yep. So now I'm going to do a tip. I'm going to do a tip now. So my tip is if you want to shoot mallards in Texas, don't leave at 9 a.m. Stay till 11. You might get a chance at seeing some late morning mallards. That's all I'm going to say.
It's funny you say 9 a.m. because, like, and it's funny you say stay till 11. So, like, for us, mallards are a morning bird up here. Like if we're morning hunting, like, if you're not seeing birds by 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, like, I've stayed later, it's worthless. It really is for us, like, in most areas here. And we always used to joke on a slow hunt. We'd say the main flight of the mallards between 9 and noon. That was our joke.
It's funny, though, because here in Texas, I've found it to be true.
Right. That's why I'm saying it's awesome, because, like, our big joke, like, my main hunting friends was always the main flight of the mallards between 9 and noon. And when we start saying that, like, we know we're done. Like, we know by that point, like, we're done. Like we're not going to get a push of birds between 9 and noon where we're hunting. So that was our joke. But for you, but for that to be true for you, that's hilarious.
Yeah. It's very true for me. And really, like for us, you'll have your first morning flight, and then you might get some stragglers in between there. But then you won't get another flight till maybe 9 or 10. And I found, you know, at 9 or 10, you'll get your second wind of birds coming in. That hey, they might have been eating instead of roosting, so they're on a flip schedule.
Sure.
You know.
And that's where scouting can come in too. Scouting and just time in the marsh, like that's where it really pays off, because you can start to pick up on these nuances and these different patterns, which once you find these different weird, unique patterns is when like you really, to me, you take that next step up in your level of hunting.
I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I still learn stuff to this day, and I don't plan to ever stop learning, you know, and that's how you become, you know, the best. And I'm nowhere near the best by no means, you know. But I do what I can do personally the best that I can, and I've had a really good success rate at it.
I mean, just when I think I got the birds figured out, they flip a 180 on me, and I'm like back to square one. I'm like, wait. As soon as you get cocky when you're like, this is gonna be an awesome hunt, like you got it dialed in. Like, and yeah, it does happen, but like as soon as I really start to get cocky and I'm like, I've got these birds pegged and I know for sure, and like, yeah, I'm calling friends, like, you gotta come out here, this is gonna be awesome. That's when like everything changes and goes sideways.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I've actually hunted a timber hole. So, you know, like I said, you know, I'm very vertical. You know, I have outboards, right. I have mud motors, I have rice field, you know, I have farm ponds. So I can change up the scenery and also, you know, try to follow the birds and put, you know, put clients and even myself on the best hunting experiences that I can offer. I have a spot on a river that's like a timber hole. So we'll take a river ride, you know, going through some backwater river, and then we'll park and then, you know, take this cut into this backwater lake, and then we'll go back to it. And there's a little pond over there, and it's like a timber hole. And we went in there on a whim, and we threw the book at them. And on that day, you know, I know the East Coast is pretty familiar with hunting wood ducks, and it sounds like y'all are too, mm-hmm. you know, but, and so are we down here. So, you know, I don't know about much on the West Coast. I don't think they're really, you know, familiar with wood ducks. I could be wrong on that, but I have a lot of guys from the West Coast that always ask to come shoot wood ducks. So that's where my
observation. I don't know for sure. I didn't talk about wood ducks when I lived in California. I did go out there for DU. I did help at a DU event, and I was talking to some of them guys, and they're like, "I'll trade a mallard hunt for you." I'm like, "With what?" He goes, "Pintails." I'm like, "Wait. Pintails? Like, I hunted an entire season just to get one good one." He goes, "Man, those are our mallards." I'm like,
yeah. So what I was getting at though with that is that we had the wood ducks decoy. We had them pass by. We had enough water motion that they went past, because wood ducks do what they want to do. They know where they're going, and they broke their, came back and decoyed and landed in. And when you can sit here and say, "Hey, I legit worked and decoyed wood ducks on public land in a back lake," I mean, that's something. I mean, to watch wood ducks break their necks to get in a hole, when wood ducks are not that, they're either going there because they always go there, or they're just going to pass shoot them.
That's the same here, man. I mean, I've had some success getting wood ducks to decoy occasionally, but for the most part, like, you got to be where they want to be, or you got to be in their flight path. Like, they don't decoy any better here than they do down by you, it sounds like.
So, that's crazy how they are, though, you know, that they're, you know.
They're stubborn.
Like, for us, though, you know, well, you know, because I think we may have some similar hunting tactics, but I compare a lot of our hunting tactics to a lot of the guys in Arkansas, because I've had a lot of buddies that run or guided with outfits in Arkansas, and the birds will get rough up there, and they'll put the Texas twist on it, and you know, do some Texas tricks that, you know, that some guys aren't familiar with. And just being able to add different techniques and tricks, I mean, just makes for a better successful hunt. You know, like a lot of, you know, guides up in Arkansas just leave their decoys out the whole season, you know. And a trick for up there is, leave your decoys out or whatever. I personally don't leave decoys out, but I like to change it up on the birds for every day. But up there, they see different birds more than they see the same birds, so it's okay. But if they were to just throw, you know, a dozen or two dozen specks on the side, they would just get that much more, you know, birds just from the confidence of seeing the speckle bellies there.
Right. and surprise, like on some hunts with pressured birds, I've had them decoy and land in the Canada goose decoys I've had set to the side rather than the ducks. And that's happened enough where even if I'm not goose hunting anymore, I'm throwing half a dozen goose decoys now. And that's in my prime shooting area now because my birds, like pressured ducks for some reason, will land in between the goose decoys I found more than they'll land by the duck decoys.
Yeah, it's them, you know, getting smart and they know it's safe.
Right.
You know, that makes them feel safe. I mean, just like for me down here, I'll run a whole bunch of coop decoys.
Sure.
And I can't tell you how many ducks I've had land in my coop decoys.
And I know some guys around here that will run big rafts of coot decoys and that weird kind of, like, it's just that I think it's part the confidence and part it's a completely different look. Cause a lot of duck hunters I see up here have their dozen goose decoys and like three dozen mallard decoys. Like, and there's like, no, like, they, like that's pretty a standard spread here, maybe four dozen mallards and they're not mixing in much other birds for confidence birds. And like you start giving out those little differences, I think is where the keys can really come to change into a more successful hunt.
And I second that, and I'm going to follow up with that. You are correct, and you just hit the nail on the head because I got a lot of guys down here in Texas I know that you'll catch them hunting the marsh, and they're running mallard, you know, old flambeau 90s, you know, 90s, early 2000 flambeau mallard decoys in the marsh or, you know, in the bay. They're killing their bluebills and their divers and their teal, of course. But, you know, to get those, you know, the pintail and your gadwall and your harder birds to hunt, you know, they're used to seeing the same thing. So, you know, you got to keep, you know, like I said, you got to keep them on their toes, right. You know. I don't run your typical, you know, spread. I mean, I have blackjacks in my spread, you know.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I have a dozen blackjacks in my spread. And a lot of people don't run blackjack decoys.
No, I've never heard of anyone. I've never heard of anyone around here running them.
You know, and I've had ducks key in on those blackjack decoys.
Sure.
Another one that I run is a spoonie. I run spoonies. I run ringnecks, gadwall, and... You know, I'll run my pintail depending on where I'm hunting at because we do have a lot of pintails in the rice.
All right.
So you had said something about the pintail and going on pintails. Going back to the geese, some of my best pintail hunts have been over goose decoys. In a goose field hunting geese. Our best pintail hunts have been hunting geese.
Interesting. We have pintails come through here, but it takes work. It takes a lot of time to like really get into it. Like you'll have the random day. Like I've had some good days on the Mississippi where like it's a lot of pintails, but we don't get them like other places do. That's for sure. So I've never had a correlation where like I have out a bunch of goose decoys and they're like, oh, pintails. Like, right. I don't think we have enough of them here to even make that correlation. Maybe some people have had those hunts, but I personally haven't.
And for us, it's not just like any decoy, you know, it ain't like we're putting out a whole bunch of Canadas. It's actually snow geese decoys that they come into. It's like you turn on a magnet and they just come into it. I mean, I have footage and videos and stuff of hunting in the conservation season. And running a goose spread with the e-collar and everything else. And, of course, we shot some geese. But, I mean, we probably had, I don't know, every bit of 1,000 pintails just circling over us. It was beautiful. It was a very beautiful sight. And I have that film, so that's nice. And I'll shoot that film over to you so you can see it. I'll have to find it from the archives. But, just to see that was awesome. But then it hits you where it hurts, because it's like you're looking and you're like, man, I can't even do anything with it. You know, all I can do is look. And then after seeing it so long, it just becomes sickening.
Right, right.
You know, and we had, you know, we actually had some guys on the East Coast come and hunt with us this past season. We hunted them in the rice one day, and they all got their limits of pintails and got to watch probably 300 pintails work the blind, just sit there and dance around the blind. And then we went from hunting and shooting pintails in the rice, we went down to Matagorda to the bay and went on the beach from the beach side and hunted the bay. And they ended up getting some bluebills and they actually ended up getting a stud widgeon and took it back home with them to put on their wall with the pintail that they got with us. So
nice.
You know, and you know, it's been some weird, it's been a weird couple years of waterfowl hunting though. Just with how I feel the flight pattern has came down as well.
Sure.
I feel the flight patterns have shifted west. You know, and the reason why I say that is for a while there, out of nowhere, we had started getting a lot of ruddy ducks, you know.
Okay.
I've been hunting my whole life, and it wasn't until, you know, in my early 20s, I learned what a ruddy duck was.
Sure.
You know, that was the first time I'd seen one in, you know, 20 years of being out in the field, you know. And then everybody started shooting them, and they became an abundance, almost like a coot. You know,
all right.
They were here, and then for a couple of years they kept coming back, and now the past couple of years there really hasn't been any. But if you go out to West Texas to all these oil filled tanks and ponds and stuff like that, they're covered up with redheads, bluebills, ruddy ducks, divers on farm ponds in the Permian. You know, what is it? The Permian Basin, I think, or whatever they call it.
Interesting. And I know other people have said that they feel like the flight pattern have changed. Like Arkansas, I know I've talked to people down there and they're like, we don't feel like it's the same as it always has been. And it's interesting because the weather is changing and that definitely does affect the birds on where they're going.
Yeah. So I feel that their flight paths have, you know, kind of shifted west a little. And I also say that because of the ruddy ducks that I observe, but also because of just everything else. So on the bay this year, we shot a long tail duck, you know, and then a week later another guy shot one out there.
This is in
Freeport, Texas.
All right.
Two long tail ducks were shot. They're not supposed to be there. We've never seen them there before.
Sure.
You know,
just blown off their flight pattern and ended up there.
Yep.
That's
and
crazy.
then here's another one. This year in the river up in the timber side of the river, you know, there was a golden eye that got shot.
So I'm assuming golden eyes here are common.
Yeah. So golden eyes here are not that common. They're not near as common, you know. You have a better chance of shooting cinnamon teal here than shooting golden eyes.
Got it. Like cinnamon teal here are like incredibly rare. But I just had a guest on from Arizona, and he's a big upland guide. And they're like, we bring non-toxic with us because when we hunt, like when we jump little like cattle troughs and that, like we'll see cinnamon teal in them. He's like, want cinnamon teal, come here. I'm like, I'm going to remember that.
Yeah, I'm going to remember that. Hey, you know what? Give me that guy's info. I might go with him myself. You know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, on that note, like, we're right around the hour mark. So I was going to give you the next few minutes to, like, let us know who your guide service was and everything, and let us know how to find you and all that good stuff.
Okay. Yeah. This hour went by quick because there's still a lot more that I feel we could talk about, because I feel we didn't even really get into any details on anything. We just kind of skimmed through the tops of everything, you know?
I know. It was a fun episode, man. Time flew.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like you told me, it'd be like sitting around a campfire. So that's what I imagine. I'm sitting on the front porch drinking a root beer, you know?
Exactly.
Shout out to my sponsor, A&W Root Beer.
We'll tag them in the post now. That's
funny. No, so my outfit's called Waterfowl Outlaws. Specialize in waterfowl, but we do the thermal pig hunts, night vision pig hunts, coyote hunts. We got cranes, geese. We do catfishing trips, white bass trips, crappie trips, green light trips, which are really fun. You go out at night and just go, you know, troll around different green lights and run lures through them and hook up into fish, you know.
Nice.
I gave the link to the Facebook earlier. Instagram account is waterfowl_outlaws, and it's Outlaws with a Z. And that's it, really, just the Instagram and the Facebook. Those are, you know, sure, what I do. And I'm a full time, you know, thanks to, you know, my hard work, and also, you know, my supporting family and wife, you know, I'm able to do this full time. Awesome. So, you know, I do the hunting when it's hunting season. That's, well, you find me in the woods or on a pond or in a rice field, you know. We have all different things for people to hunt. If you want to hunt rice fields, I got you. You want to hunt a farm pond, I got you. You want to go take a boat ride up in some into a river, into a backwoods timber hole, and maybe shoot some wood ducks and mallards, I got you. I mean, nice. We hunt all over Texas. I mean, we even hunt, you know, we have a couple of spots that's almost like you're hunting in Louisiana. I mean, we're hunting in cypress needles and cypress trees in some areas.
Cool.
I mean, we can definitely. That's the nice thing I like to tell everybody. Hey, I can't promise you the birds. I just can't. You know, I can't guarantee you're going to shoot nothing. I can't guarantee you're going to see nothing. I don't control these birds. What I can guarantee is I'm going to do my best to put us in the best spot. I'm going to guarantee you're going to have a good time, because, you know, when I take my clients out, I don't want it to be like, hey, I'm a guide and you're my client. I want it to be like I'm with my buddies. I want them to feel like they're hunting with their buddies or their brother or their uncle or whatever the case may be, you know, and I really strive for that. That camaraderie is really what I strive for in the hunting and fishing industry. That alone is what, you know, makes me do what I do.
And that's why I do the podcast, man, because it's, to me, like, that camaraderie is all part of the experience. And that's really what I like try to drive home, like, in these, all these shows. It's the experience is what you're really out there for.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of it. I mean, we do the duck hunts, teal hunts, dove hunts, you know, like I said, the crane, the geese, and then the varmints and the pigs and the coyotes and all that good stuff for night hunts, you know. And we go out to pastures, and we also hunt the rice fields at night for the pigs. So not only are we releasing the ground to hunt on for ducks, we're also helping the farmer out by taking care of his pigs, so it's not tearing up the rice that's planted and grown. Sure. Which in return is, you know, helping us have, you know, make sure that we have good rice growth for our teal, you know, so it's cool to see that cycle and to even talk about that cycle, because it's, you know, the farmer's helping us by letting us use his land, but we're helping him by, you know, controlling the pigs, you know, destroying his crop so he can, you know, have the best yield when it's time to, you know, cash that crop in.
Yeah, we'll have you back on the show for sure, and we'll do a hunt about night hunting, like different coyotes and pigs and that, because I definitely want to talk to someone about that. So we'll bring you on middle of the winter when everyone up here is frozen out, and we'll talk about some pig hunting.
Yeah, that'll be cool, because like I said, there's a lot we could talk about, and I feel we didn't even, you know, get to half of it, you know.
Yeah, man, we'll have you back on for sure, and I really appreciate you coming on, and it's been a great episode.
No, I appreciate you having me. I really do. Yeah, and shout out to my buddy Jacob for getting us in contact, you know, our buddy Jacob, I'd say.
Good old Jacob. So I appreciate you coming on, and I'm going to bring you back on the show. Well, probably a couple months from now, and we'll definitely get. I want to talk about night vision and pigs and thermals, man. Like for sure.
Yeah, awesome. So, awesome. Yeah, for sure.
Thanks again for coming on, and to all my listeners, thank you for tuning in for another show. I wouldn't do this without you. And until next time, keep chasing that experience.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures, your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue. Brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.